we're going to, Steve and I are going to work through these case studies tonight a little bit. And I'm going to talk about how, you know, talk about the information, get some feedback from you guys. And then Steve's going to try to put, we've worked a little bit together, and he's going to put together some of the diagrams that you're doing in your group. And so these case studies are real, and one of them's really active with somebody here tonight. And I think the names have changed to protect the innocent, but another one is probably a year old, but we never really have talked about it. So we get these case studies, and I keep them on a file so we can walk through it. So the purpose of tonight is not to have the plan be exactly correct or the way that you might do it in your community group, but just it's a way to think and process through that so you'll see what we're coming through, because everybody wants a plan, and so we're trying to process it with you and tell you where we're going and what we're trying to do. And so that's the purpose of tonight. One thing before I get started, I was telling the leaders is I'd like to do something that I was on vacation, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, and it's amazing when you're not working, you have these great quiet times and whatever, and I try to have them during the week, but I'm being honest with you, when in Colorado, I have some great ones, and a lot of times to listen and things like that. And so one of the things God put on my mind, a little project I'd like to put together and surprise you. It may not come out, so if it doesn't, whatever, but I'd like to for you to think about and pray about sending some pictures to your closed group leader, and who will forward them to me. And I'm going to try to put something together. But I'd love for you to share some photos with me, if you would, of maybe a time in your life that might be tough. That maybe with your prodigal, maybe your prodigal's in a tough spot, and to you, you can read that picture and realize it's not great. Or even if we can't see it, if it's a great, it'll speak to you in what I'm trying to put together. And then a time maybe where God's really blessed you. Maybe you're serving someplace where you feel closest to God. Maybe it's on vacation. Maybe it's walking with your spouse. Maybe it's, I don't know. You know, I don't know that God just asked me to be faithful in this. And so I don't know how it's going to turn out. But if I get enough pictures and enough photos and whatever, I want to put something together that hopefully it'll bless all of us. So I'd love for you to pray about that and think about that and give that to your closed group leader. So this first one here is, can I put that on slideshow? There we go. So the first case is somebody that's with us now, so we're, you know, that's struggling, that's doing really, really well. And so I just want to, this is a little bit of a different, we've never really had a same-sex struggle in our plan, and so I think there's some challenges there, so we thought, well, you know, this is somebody that's coming through here, she's doing great, gave permission to kind of use this. So this is the issue. The mom has been a believer since youth, kind of grew up in the church, met her, I believe, if I can remember the story right, I kind of summarized this, but met her husband at a Christian camp, I think. Maybe as counselors, if I remembered. And they were married for 17 years. And 3 years in, she realized that I think he had had an affair with another guy, and certainly realized he had a struggle, that her husband had a struggle. And eventually that led to the ending of their marriage, and is living with his gay, they're either married or their gay partner right now. And then now we've got a 17-year-old daughter that struggles with bisexual attraction. They're living in the house. There's some lying going on, and obviously mom and dad are certainly not on the same page. I think that when I was reading her plan questionnaire that she got in open group, I listed some of the fears that she had, and that was that she wouldn't give up her lesbian bisexual tendency, that she will become an atheist, that she will develop an eating disorder, that she will suffer from depression and attempted suicide when the gay girlfriend rejects her, and she will want to go and live with the father and the gay partner, and those were her fears. I think there was one more slide I had, yeah. And so her obstacles were, she was unwilling to accept the truth of her daughter's struggles and tendencies with the same sex, and she, her obstacles that she would have a fear of losing the relationship, and her obstacles that she has been depending on her own strength. And wouldn't you say that another way of saying control issues? Yeah. And then, and self-pity. You know, the thing that stands out here, this lady is really doing well. You're doing well if you've been here for a few weeks and you're willing to share this story with the open group. I mean, that defines well, that you're open and honest and transparent. And I was really moved by the transparency and the honesty of all that, because there's not a person in here that doesn't get that, right? And so, so what I'm going to do right off the bat, Steve's, you know, we're going to show how, what does that look like when we have a diagram of prodigal chaos? We're going to wait for a second, but I'd love your feedback on, it's a little open-ended tonight, so I'm going to start with, if you were that parent, you've got a 17-year-old living with you with that struggle, with that husband, or if it's husband, just make it, you know, make it your female, your spouse. What would be the questions you would want to say? How do I handle what? What do you think you're wanting help for in your plan? And what do you think the issues that she deals with every day? 17-year-old in the house. I can tell you right now, it said in her story that she just had an argument confronting about, I think her daughter is bisexual, she calls it. And so she knows that she's having a relationship with same-sex attraction, and that she's also been lying to her. And so now she's not out of the house. And so she's in the house. So what do you think? What are some of the issues you think that they might be dealing with?
Trust.
Okay. So there's the issues they're dealing with are trust. You say lack of respect?
Yes.
Now, is that lack of respect
from daughter to mom?
Okay. So lack of respect, she's lying, telling her mom is old-fashioned, dad gets it. I mean, I can see how that might happen, right? There's certainly trust issues because of lying. Randy?
She can be dealing with loneliness, thinking that she's in this all by herself.
Okay.
No spouse to, you know, lean on.
Okay.
I think for me, it's the part that, depending on her own strength, and in my situation where I was trying to deal with that all myself, I realized that I needed to depend on Christ and to follow Him so that I would become more like Christ in my new life with Him. And that would change the dynamics of it just by doing what I can do, because the other things I have no control over. But yeah, I know there needs to be boundaries.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat that from the back. So if you didn't hear, he said, again, his story is a great one. And he was saying he struggled with some of the same things, depending on his own strength, not depending on Christ. And one of the biggest advantages is that she actually wrote that on the board, because it's hard to, you know, you can't get there unless you realize that you're having a problem depending on your own strength and you're not making it. Most of the people that walk through that door realize that their plan isn't working and that their strength's not cutting it most of the time, not always. So those are some of the things. What else? Yes. Okay, so not understanding who God is. Okay. You know, I was thinking, you know, this is some of the things, and we've got some parents here that you know, struggle with this issue, and I'm just going to tell you that. Loita said, "Hey, I got somebody here that I've come across a story that I think you want to share, and for the case study." And I'd asked for the case study, and she told me what it was. And when she told me what it was, I took a big sigh and I went, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know about this very well." So we do talk about it. I don't mean that exactly what I'm saying, but when it first came here, when we first got the issue that would we handle same-sex attraction and the prodigal, I just said, you know, I'm out on that. I don't understand it. It's one of those things I got to ask God about. You know, give me good old crystal meth, heroin. That's my wheelhouse. That's my wheelhouse, right? And I think this may be harder than that, because, you know, crystal meth and heroin is a bottom. When you do those, it ain't going to a good place. But when you do this, the world tells you that's, and they almost put you on their shoulders and walk you around the city hall. And so I do think it's a huge challenge. So I thought we ought to just deal with this. But I think some of the things I was thinking about was, you know, she's going to go to college, and she's got a kid that's rebellious, not truthful. But I'm not sure she's rebellious. I think she's lying about her same sex. Let's assume she's really not even a bad kid. She's lying about that, but she is going places and not respecting God. So how does she handle giving her whatever funds are available to go to college? What do we do, you know, during the school year in high school, and how does that relationship, what does that look like? To me, I'm asking, and I told some of the people that are walking through this and have walked through that with their family, you know, to help us out tonight. So those are some of the things I'm thinking about. Anything else we've missed? Isolation. Yeah, loneliness. I'll put that up with loneliness and isolation.
Maybe a car and a phone.
A car and a phone.
Well, she's lying. Should she be using the car that she's paying for?
Okay. So I think the issue is that she's lying. I'm going to put that up with trust. And I'm going to put that up there with that, and then those are some of the consequences that we, what did we say, lying? Yeah. Okay.
I think the elephant in the room here is that you've got a schism in the biblical view. The mom looks at the Bible one way, and the daughter is obviously looking at it and interpreting it in a different way. And is that enough to make what Jay led to here reason to enact consequences like depriving them from school or these sorts of things? So I think it's a really tough one, because as you start hopefully having your daughter see the biblical view that we hold, where this is sin, it's not a lifestyle, it's sin, and to deal with it lovingly in that manner, how do you get there?
Exactly. And I think that, any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on that? I mean, Randy, Mickey, you want to comment on, you know, what that relationship looks like that senior year in college and going off to college and the conversations you have? Is there anything or anybody else that has struck? What?
Senior year in high school.
What did I say, college? I meant high school. I mean, this, you know, the year they have left in the house, a little over a year they have left in the house, and then going off to college and what that looks like now that she's discovered this and she wants a plan.
Well, the relationship will be strained.
I'm going to hand you this so you can talk about it. We don't have another mic out there, do we? If we don't, we'll just use that one.
The relationship will be strained, especially if you're new to this chaos in your life, as with any kind of new chaos.
Let me hold for a second. Randy and Mickey have been long-term leaders with us at Prodigal, and they have walked this path with their daughter. So we go to them a lot. So, yeah, go ahead.
There will be a tendency to maybe kind of walk on eggshells around your daughter or son. Because you're trying to maintain some type of relationship, even though it's very fragile. They're going to reject everything you throw at them with regard to what the Bible says, because they've just discounted that altogether. Because the gay society has their own interpretation of what the Bible says. So they discount everything you say from God's point of view or your own point of view on how you believe Scripture defines sexuality. It is very, very difficult. And, you know, I hate to be a doomsday person, but this can be a very long and arduous path. We've been dealing with our daughter for over 20 years, and it's not getting any better.
Right. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't, and that's the same thing you'd say with drugs as well. And the thing I would encourage the person, I don't even know who this is exactly. I just, but I would tell them that I'm encouraged that, at least in what I've written, that they place their faith in God. They've been walking a path that's trying to get closer to God the whole time, according to what they've written and according to what everyone has seen from her in our group so far. And she's very honest about her obstacles and her struggles. One thing I did want to go back that jumped out at me is interesting, in that her fears are these. Is there anything in there that jumps out at you, that she will not do this, she will do this? All of those things are future possibilities. And of all those things, again, she would probably tell us that if we were here. I don't know her well enough, so I'm assuming that she's not naive to this. But all of those things you have no control over. The ministry can help you by just pointing out the fact that these are all things that you suffer for. I remember when I went to Wilderness Treatment Center, one of the things that jumped off the page, they said expectations. You know, I was, you know, what's going to happen? I'm afraid that he's going to lose his scholarship. He's going to lose this. He's going to do that. And expectations are only planned disappointments. And I've never forgotten that from the minute that I've ever heard it. And these are all expectations and worries that you have no control over whatsoever. So, Andy.
What you might have control over is blame and unforgiveness. And that's a basic issue.
Right.
Both for the mother and for the daughter. Blame and
fathers. Yeah. So the issue with blame, guilt, and forgiveness, that kind of thing, are things you can control. So, Steve, you put together some diagrams on this, and let's look and see how you... And we haven't talked. I haven't seen the diagrams or whatever. So I'll tell him if he got it right later. But
so just as a reminder, when we're doing these diagrams, we have a basic set of tools. The goal is God, and it's important to know where he plays in all these family dynamics. It's easy. The blues are boys, whether they're husband or sons. The pinks are moms and daughters. That green circle represents a covenant bond, so that if there's a marriage involved and they were married in accordance with what we believe scripturally, then that green ring belongs there because there's a substance to that in working in the marriage. The arrows represent anything in red is a bad thing. It's a bad communication, a bad plan of communication. Black's good. The red X's are boundaries that are not good ones, and the black X's are boundaries that are good ones. So pretty simple. Lets us see kind of visually what's going on in the dynamic. One of the things Jay alluded to this last time was sort of looking at what a single parent, just a circle of God around them, and then the marriage. To the degree that there's overlap of the blue and the pink indicates being on the same page. When that separates and there's a red X's between there, that means they're not on the same page. There's a boundary there. Something's going on that's unhealthy, and that needs to be eliminated. There's no plan when you see that. And then down in the very bottom one, when there's black X's there, usually that's a problem in the spousal relationship where one's a drug user and you need to separate. Not necessarily, that's not divorce there, that's talking about a season of healing, but boundaries need to be there to protect the kids and the non-using individual. So these are just some structures that we see in relationships. So moving on to this one, looking at this family dynamic, what we had was the mom, a son and a daughter. We don't have any information about the son other than that he's 17 years old. The daughter's 16. and then we have this ex-husband. I think they're divorced. I'm not sure about that. It did seem like they were both of the faith when they were married. You know, there's some red X's up there because it makes me wonder how healthy the communication is there. Perhaps there's encouragement for this from the ex-husband to this daughter who knows what's going on there that's pulling her attractions or framing her view on that, perhaps even her biblical view. But that's sort of the way things set up. And then all the things that are listed there, I think, are things Jay's already enumerated that have to do with fears and so forth. I need to make mine bigger so I can read it. So then what I do then is look at what on the next page here, if you will.
Hey, before you go back. Read out loud that her personal mission statement down there in the bottom. I think that's...
I can't read it.
I'll try to help you.
No, where's the... How do you enlarge
No, I can read it over here, Bert.
Because it's so small.
It takes two of us, okay? So she says, I'm a daughter of the King, completely loved and accepted, who lives to point others to Jesus in all that I say and do, in hopes that they will experience being part of his family forever. So we want to keep that in mind when we're coming up with a plan here in a second. So that's her mission statement. It's a good one. So
I'm glad you were able to read that, because it put me back on course here a little bit. When we're trying to put these family dynamic together, a lot of that comes from what you give us in open group, in your mission statement, in your story of grace, and in the plan questionnaire that you fill out. And really, that's all we have to go on in close group when you first come in there. And the mission statement's huge. I mean, when you have a good mission statement like that, it applies to how your plan works out so often.
And then, and let's say it was the first week and you gave us this information, that we're just coming up with what you gave us, okay? And so you might come in the group, and the question I'd have to the, if the woman was standing right here, I'd say, we've moved him out of the God picture, right? What do you think about that? Is that true? Are we good to go there? Whatever. And how about your daughter? Because that's another question. Did we move her out of the God circle? Is she, you know, you're afraid of her coming an atheist and giving up hope, but is that something she's struggling with right now? Should we put her half in, half out? Those kind of things. And what it does is it just defines for you and the group in a picture format where we are. It just defines the chaos, and it's just the communication has accelerates in leaps and bounds. This is not some theoretical exercise we're doing. We've actually seen our group stay together and build and grow and build better relationships by, if everyone can see this on the same page. So go ahead, Steve. Yeah.
So anyway, that's important in terms of the format. Now then, the second step is, and so when we are in group, we go into the family dynamic broad. We're not talking about the prodigal. Everybody wants to talk about the prodigal's lying, the prodigal's doing this, the behavior. That's the favorite subject. And we kind of push that to the side and really talk about the relationships aside from the prodigal. And then the next meeting, usually we look specifically at that prodigal behavior. And to me, I just felt like this girl was raised strong under strong Christian influence. So I have to believe that there's a God circle involved somewhere. What I don't know is about her friend or her partner. And I certainly don't know what communication's going on there. And I suspect some of it's not good. I can't honestly read that once again.
What on the
The stuff there? I can't see.
Yeah, how old is the partner? Is she a believer? Is she allowed in your home? Yeah, those are the things. Does the girlfriend get to come home? Is she allowed in your home? What house rules are being broken? What have been the consequences? What specific behavior is the source of your chaos? Does your daughter go to church with you? Is your daughter in community? Has your partner been invited to church? How you know those kind of things. Those are real issues.
So these are things that came to mind that weren't really on the paper, but when you start seeing this isolated thing, someone said that you don't want them in isolation. Well, how do you get them out of isolation? And some of that has to do with these thoughts about how you would bring both in there and hopefully change their biblical view.
Yeah. You know, and I think as I look at this, I think that one of the things that I would tell this lady in a plan is that, you know, right here is gonna kill the whole thing. And I think she realized that. And when we said, what community you have, she said, you know, my community group, and I think she meant here, and then her husband. And that was the only two she had. And it stuck out to me that there's a question mark about the community, and her husband, which I'm not thinking that's good community right now. And my point is that's probably why she's here at Prodigal, and that's a good start. But she needs to go to Prodigal in her close groups, and she also needs a church that would expand her community, because it's going to be, as Randy and Mickey said, this is going to be a long road, and doing that in isolation is not going to be good. And I got to tell you, I don't know that we, please don't think that we're up here and I'm going to solve the transgender and how you handle the relationships and they come by the house and whatever. That has to be processed in community. I think I could theoretically make an argument for, you know, I didn't think I could say this until I read Unoffendable, but I think I could make an argument from John Piper in that group that I would never attend a gay wedding. And then I think I could also make an argument that would be very theological sound, that in love, you could attend a gay wedding. Okay, now that may sound striking. I never thought I'd say that. I'm not saying which one I would do. I have an answer, but that's not the purpose. Right now I'm saying that I don't think that's a salvation issue. I think that that's something you have to process in your community as to how you're going to handle that or how you're going to handle that relationship. But I think that a plan would help define the chaos, don't you agree? And that you could have some people that had walked that path with you that could give you good, sound, biblical arguments for trying to process that. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. With the daughter and the father?
Yeah, with the daughter and the father.
It was not explicitly stated, but it was insinuated that the father and the daughter, she was very worried about her daughter. She certainly got a more receptive ear. I can only assume that communication, it's there, and that she's worried actually about her daughter going and living with her father and the gay partner. She mentioned that, so I assume that communication is there.
So the third step then gets kind of headed the way you are here, and that's putting these two things together and figuring out potential pathways. And so what I was seeing here was the finding out what this father is, what he's saying, and probably the only good way to do that would be through the mom to figure out what is good communication that would be passed down to the daughter and what would be bad, and decide whether he's really encouraging a biblical view of this is a lifestyle, this is not sin, or is he endorsing the biblical view for his daughter and hopes that she doesn't stray? I mean, it could be either. And then the other thing is the mom could definitely engage in communication with both of them. Maybe that dotted black line would suggest if she wanted to fulfill her purpose, I mean her mission statement, then maybe she's going to be an influence to the friend as much as to the daughter and engage them, you know. You don't have to give up your position biblically, but you can still love them both. And that's what, to me, seemed logical. And I guess we don't really know what the communication is between the daughter and her friend, but that's
yeah. So we're not going to solve that tonight. I would end with this, and then maybe get your comment again, Randy, Mickey, or anybody else that's struggling with that tonight. Because I'm speaking with fear and trembling, having not walked this myself. But I see this diagram is not too much different than if you had a spouse that was walking with God. This is a very common scenario here where it's not same sex, it's an alcoholic husband or a husband that's left them with an adulterous relationship or doing drugs himself, and then the son is rebellious, and now they've got a partner in their rebellious dad, and the mom comes to here because she's worried about her son. And what we realize and make her realize is that she's got two prodigals. She's got her husband and her daughter. And so I'm going to say something that's really difficult, that really requires knowing and understanding who God is. And that is that if her mission statement, if I can go back, Steve, see if I can read that again. Is that she was a daughter of the king, completely loved and accepted, who lives to point others to Jesus. So she wants to point her daughter to Jesus. She wants to point her husband to Jesus. She wants to point everybody that's looking at her family to Jesus. Now, the hard part about this, and Jenny and I have had many conversations about this book, but the reason I really liked Unoffendable is that at the end of the day, I don't think yelling at her daughter and her husband and saying you're a sinner and you're going to hell long term is going to win anybody over. I think realizing that we all struggle with sin and that I'm not going to take this personally, as much as it pains me to see this life, it takes 20, 30, 40 years to see this thing played out, because the world tells you you're doing something cool. It's almost become the cool thing to do. You know, heterosexuality is boring today. But on one hand, I don't know what the right answer is day-to-day living that out, but I do know this. I know that if you give in and accept all of the lifestyle as a parent because you want to have them as your friend, ultimately, I don't want to be there standing in front of Jesus when I have to answer that, because the Bible's pretty clear on it personally. I think loving them, not taking it personally, not being offended, telling them the truth of how much you love them, but you can't support this lifestyle, is speaking truth along the way, and not raising your voice, not being angry. Every day I would try to wake up trying not to be angry, but just trying to say, Lord, give me the strength to get through this day, to find out a way to love my daughter, to not be offended, not yell, to whatever, and try to sort those things out, and then surround myself with a community that would help me walk this path every day. And realizing that at the end of the day, 30 years from now, when her community is looking on her and she has not compromised her biblical principles but yet loved her daughter every step of the way, and when her daughter said she was conservative or right-wing or bigoted, or that she loved her and she hugged her and she stayed online and on the course. In a small way, again, I think it's easier with drugs, but my son's adopted, and just this week, you know, every time we communicate, I tell him we didn't abandon him. And he responds back very vitriolically that you're not getting out from under that. You've done nothing but abandon me. And people know me better than you. People love me more than you. You've abandoned me. And so I know the truth. And it hurts. But I know my heart, right? And I know that's not true. And just like my identity is that I'm loved, I'm not an abandoning parent. I'm a parent that didn't do it perfectly. And then I just think that she needs to be encouraged and surround herself with community, that you're doing the right thing. You tell your kids the truth. You love them as hard as you can. And if they don't accept that, you can't change your lifestyle. And if you do, you're putting them as an idol above God. And it's just it's a really difficult case study. And it's a very difficult situation. And that's why I had a little fear and trembling. But I hope you'll appreciate the honest approach to try to figure some of this out and give you some thoughts. And that should probably stimulate a lot of conversation in your closed group tonight. Is there anything or any comments before we go to the next thing? Larry?
Just given the aspect of the 16-year-old in the house versus this was a 23-year-old
daughter.
Yeah.
So he's saying, what if, just like all plans, they really change after 18. And I would say that, before 18, I just think you have to provide them, you have to provide them a roof and over their heads, and they're going to high school and you're providing for all that. I don't know. Again, the college thing for me, Steve and I were talking about it today. So, I mean, I'll throw it out there. I don't know. I reserve the right to change my mind on this. We're just processing it. I don't know. I'm a lot more sure on the other things because I've walked with it for 15 years. But Steve and I were saying, I don't know that I would withdraw the money I had set aside to college for them to go to college and prevent them an education. I'm not sure I would. I mean, I don't know that I would do that, but I would certainly point out to the fact that when these things come up, I'm not going to support you bringing home some and having a same-sex relationship. I mean, no more than I would for my, you know, as old-fashioned as I am, I'm not having my son come home and having a girlfriend come in and staying up in the room when they're at my house. And so there's things I would approve or not approve. I'm not sure I'd cut off college funding for this. But when they're out of the house and they graduated from college, they're 23. I mean, personally, I mean, I don't know what you'd comment about the difference, but my difference would be that I certainly wouldn't provide funding. I'd still love them. In this particular situation, I don't know that it varies as much as it does when someone's doing drugs and you withdraw all funding and relationship when they're lying. Now, I will say this. If they're lying under 18, you've got no choice but just to put up with it, enforce consequences. The thing that you can enforce consequences very clearly on here is any kind of lying and manipulation. I wouldn't tolerate any lying. I'd take away those things for lying. And I think that when you get older, lying destroys all the relationship past college. And so I don't know, Steve, what are your thoughts on that?
They're not much different. We're dealing with that in our close group, and the daughter is certainly in her 20s, and basically the father's invited up to visit her, and he's offered to take them to church, both of them to church, but not to the church they go to, because that church believes in that this is a lifestyle and not a sin, and he has found a church in their vicinity that believes it's a sin, and he said, I'll go there if you guys want to go with me, and probably they won't, but he still visits them and goes fishing with them and has a relationship with them, but he does not change his position of his biblical view.
Right.
And they know that, and I guess in a way if they were in college, I would say maybe you got to make this grade, because you know you'd want them to get educated. But if they were lying, I would pull. I would agree with that. And and other than that, I just would, you know, make my home rules what they are.
Right. I just think the reminder here is that all of this was predicted. Right. The thing that's encouraging is that it says in the end times that we're going to become the minority and we're going to be persecuted and that we're going to look like the narrow-minded right-wing bigots that we're called. That's just where we are. And that's why we got to huddle up and remind each other that we're not crazy. You know, after all these communications this week, I went to Jenny and I said, "Babe, I'm a pretty smart guy. I got a high IQ. I sort through most problems. And this knucklehead spins me around on my ear, you know, with two emails. I mean, how does this happen? You know?" And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking through this, and I just got to think that, you know, just like that conversation that I had with, remember I was telling you about the fella, the conversation I had with that Saturday, I said, "You may not agree with what I'm about to tell you, but if you just humor me for a second, that if, I mean, you know, we had a great relationship this year. Oh, yeah, I love you. I love you. I do love you too, man. You're great. We're good friends. We're always going to be good friends." And it goes beyond a normal relationship. We had a really special relationship this year. He's a great kid. And he and Bird were even closer. And so I said, "So if I had, just humor me, if God actually intervened in time and came down here to save us because we're sinners and we can't get to a perfect God without a sacrifice, and he did that, and all we have to do is believe in him, and you can have peace now in any circumstances, knowing that your eternity is secure, and we get to spend eternity together. If that was true, and if I believe that with all my heart, why wouldn't I tell you about that? And if I didn't tell you about that, what would that say about our relationship and how much I loved you? So if I could be wrong, I could be wrong. But I don't think I'm wrong, and that's why I'm here telling you about it." And I'd almost take that, as I was thinking about this, is that not a way that we could try to tell our kids, hey, I may be wrong, and I may be, at the end of time, I may be that right-wing bigot, but I got to tell you, I got one rudder in this life, and it's the Bible. and I believe it with all my heart, and I would be compromising. You could call me a hypocrite if I agreed with what you're doing, because I would take an exception to the Bible you know I love and the Word of God that I love. So I'm standing true to that course, and I'm putting the only thing I love more than you is Him. And I got to stand by that course. And that's what it says. You know it says it. I've taught you that your whole life. And I'm going to stand by this course. I'm going to love you every step of the way. It pains me when you have these same-sex relationships. It pains me when you do drugs. I don't think that's life. And I don't think that it's honoring God. And I might be wrong, but I'm honest. And I'm not a hypocrite. And I'm staying the course. And I'm not going away. And this is who I am. This is what I'm going to be. And it doesn't mean I don't love you. I mean, it means I love you, except there's only one thing I love more, and that's God and what He tells me in His Word. I mean, I don't know how else to handle that. And that may be all you guys have your whole life, Randy and Mickey. I mean, it might be. That might be all you have, and that He says, well done, and you stay the course. And she may say, I'm not buying it. And but I don't know what else you have. Any comments? Okay, so this was the quick one. I told Bird this would probably be about 10 minutes. So so let's do this next one real quick if we can. This is a case, too, where there's a married couple with two sons. This was a case that one of the leaders gave me about a year ago or two. We didn't get to it that night because it came in late. But I think there's a lot to talk about here. We won't spend a whole lot more time, so we'll get you to your closed group real quick. But there's a married couple with two sons. One's 21 and one's 16, and the older son has a 3-year-old child out of wedlock. The mom has primary custody. The older son has a low-wage job, and he works part-time. The dad works a lot and wants a much harder set of rules. So I'm assuming mom is the enabler, dad is a little bit more of a rule setter. They're clearly not on the same page. The older son lives at home. Mom wants him to have a car, so they bought him one. And she doesn't want him on the street because that would mean he would not see his son. And they kicked him out once, but his grandmother took him in for 6 months. And they pay for the cell phone and the insurance and the gas for his car. And the older son watches TV, stays up late, and smokes pot a lot. The younger son is on track in school. No major issues, but seems quiet and depressed a lot. They do not want to tell the grandson's mom about all the issues, as that means she won't let the grandson come to stay with them, as the dad's drug use could endanger him. A lot going on there, right? Okay, and it's complicated and it's tough, and you understand how. So you've got the grandparents, as I understand it. Steve, why don't you throw yours? I think yours. You've diagrammed this, so why don't you throw that up and we'll talk about it, and then you guys can ask questions and throw in your 2 cents worth, and then we can go work on your own plans back in your closed group.
So the diagram just shows, this is again just sort of looking at the dynamic, including everybody, so to speak, but not delving into the prodigality of the son, the older son. There's a boundary between the husband and wife, because Jay alluded to the fact that one was a rule maker, one was a rule breaker, right? So right off the bat, you've got a problem in defining a plan there. You've got the little triangle here of the son who's not married, so no God. God's not defined in this thing. I couldn't find him in anything we were given, so I don't know where he is, okay, for anybody. And so he's had a child with M, the mom. And so I don't know what communication goes on between the son and the mom, the father and the mom there, and I'm pretty sure about the communication that's going from the wife down to the son, and basically she's trying to shield him from that, and in a way that I get the feeling that what she believes is that by keeping her son out of the picture of his wrongdoing, smoking pot, and doing all that, that she's protecting him so that they can still have this grandchild in their midst, because the mom has custody. So I get the feeling that her whole deal is keeping that little family unit together And really, the question would be, is that good for either the son or the grandson?
Wait, who has custody? The son?
The mom does. The mom has, the baby's mom.
So the mom has custody, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so any thoughts on that? And I assume it was the, so it's the wife who's coming to prodigal. Right. So if she's in your close group, if you're trying to love her well, what are some questions you're answering? What are the things that, you know, let's just condense it a little bit. We can cut through it. They're not here in the room. We don't have to be quite as, always need to be compassionate and loving and because it's a tough situation. But any thoughts that come to your mind, any questions you'd want to ask about this whole situation? You know what? I didn't see that. This is a very short little case study, and she doesn't have a personal mission statement. But if let's assume that it was to she came in. We can play with this. What if she had a great mission statement? What if she had the same mission statement that the other lady had? Wanted to glorify God in all she does and point people to Christ, and she was struggling with this. Everything was spinning out of control. So what would you tell her? She doesn't have community. I'm just guessing that she doesn't have community. But when she walked through those doors, she's got our community, and that's what we're trying to tell her and trying to love her well. How would you love her well? What would you point out are the errors of her thinking right now?
Why does the son have a part-time job?
Why is he allowed in the house smoking pot and all that kind of thing? And the question? No, it's the older son.
The sons are still in the house.
Right. Okay, so let's look at that real quick. Why enable? Because I think the answers to this question are the same answers to many people in this room. Maybe not quite as blatant, but if it hits home, then we all get it, because every one of us have gone through this at one point in time. Why enable a 23-year-old man who's able and capable of working, who's living in your house smoking pot?
It begs to know what the house rules are.
And Steve pointed out very clearly that one of the most difficult things we see in prodigal, right, are grandkids caught in the sway. I mean, that takes it up exponentially when grandkids are in play. And so you've got a grandkid we're trying to protect. The problem is you are harming, I mean, this son, the older son, is getting no lessons whatsoever. There's no consequences here. Smoking pot, not working, and he's using the grandkid as leverage, in my opinion, to stay in the house. And so those are some of the things that you wouldn't say on the first day at Prodigal. You might ask those questions and have them think about it. And that's why it's a long story and it's difficult, because walking right in there, you know, we try to be compassionate. We've all been there. We're trying to point out those obvious things by saying, okay, what's your mission statement? Do you see how hard that is on the first night you're here to do that? But when you hear this story in newcomer, you know, we tend to know where this is going most of the time. But the questions I'd ask was, is this mom, you know, what I'd love to do is, let's just say for theoretically, we find out that this mom's a believer, okay? And this mom's a believer. We would like to convince her that the best thing for everyone involved is for them to have that grandchild go back into custody with the mother, where he's better protected, and not living with a dad who's a deadbeat and is smoking pot. And that let God trust God in that situation to oversee that issue. That way the older son gets kicked out of the house. The grandkid is protected. The son has to suffer the consequences of their action. And if there was a chance for the older son and the mom to be reconciled, which would bring God the most honor, it's for this guy to grow up. And it's not going to ever happen right now in this situation. So those are some of the things that we would think about asking. We've cut to the chase hard. And so for newcomers, forgive me. We would never go that fast in a million years, okay? We're running out of time. So that would take 6 months to flush out. So, but does anybody want to comment on those comments? Because that may seem brutally summary, a brutal summary and tough. Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
But when you see someone who is locked in the fear, shame, and guilt, that whole addiction cycle,
uh-huh.
to leave them in that, that's just an unloving act for that person who's locked. And so it's rethinking what love is. Does that make sense?
Does it make sense? It's the prodigal story. It's what we do. Did you hear what he said? Yeah, he summed up prodigal in a sentence. And he said, you know, really what people come in here, and I'll tell you who suffer it the most is Christians. You know, there's a whole topic that I talked about a few weeks ago called the difference between codependency and Christian love, right? It looks very similar. And what he's saying is we need to redefine love. Loving that person and letting them live in that house, in that circle of enablement, is the most unloving thing you could do. It's not loving. And so a lot of people need permission when they walk through those doors, not knowing what they're here for. We give them permission to say, hey, have you ever heard of Proverbs 19:18? Discipline your son in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. A hot-tempered man must pay the penalty, for if you rescue him, you'll have to do it again. Proverbs 29:21, a servant can't be corrected by mere words. Though he understands, he will not respond. And all of a sudden they go, wait a minute. God's given me permission to love them in a way that lets them reap what they sow. God won't be mad at me. Your church might be mad at you because they don't get it. Your friends might be mad at you because they never walked through it. But what we're trying to say is, let's educate your friends later, but right now, let's follow God's word. There's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end, it leads to death. And so that's what we're saying. That's what we're trying to say. And we're not trying to say we know it all. We're not trying to say, do it the way I did it. Those are truths we learned from walking through the scripture and people telling us and knocking us around the head and saying, hey, this is not loving. You know, you're focused on Jesus, the lamb, but how about the lion? How about anyone who loves his mother and father more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his father and his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who doesn't take his cross up daily and follow me is not worthy of me. Matthew 10:28. That's the same Jesus. Right, I'm first, and so these plans are tough, but those are some of the things that we try to work through. And I hope that these things, they seem busy up there, but when you see them, every time you flash that up, if they're in my community group, I'm going to come up and say, "Where's God in this picture? Who can we put God around? What's your personal mission statement?" And if you were in a group, there's a lot of questions that these diagrams become obvious that you ask, and you ask them as a group. So as you ask them as a group, you learn them as a group, and you build relationships with one another, and that's where you bond. And when you get in trouble 6 weeks from now and you're struggling, you can trust that other person because they loved you so well in developing your plan. You trust them, and you know that they have a trust in God. And it's a wonderful thing because it's hard to find this outside of the prodigal, even in a church setting, for people who've walked this path on a consistent basis. So anyway, I think we'll close it right there and go to your closed groups tonight. We've got a lot of newcomers tonight, I think, don't we? I think you want to raise your hands if you're newcomers? Yeah, okay, perfect. So if you have newcomers, you can meet back there in the back at that table with Lisa and John and Mary. And again, this is a little bit unusual night because we're doing case studies. Normally we have a lecture and go over a group, but you're welcome. I'm glad you're here. And everybody go to your group and work on your plans. Thanks.